Joe DeFalco in the ring, raising up the future. Got the belts, got the sweat, endless life in a suplex. Future stars, big dreams, breaking all the seams. Las Vegas stage where the spotlight beams. Arena lights flash bright, warriors of the night. Mat slams, crowd roars, showdown of the mic. From the rookies to the pros, grinding day and night. Every step, every fight, honing skills tight. Future stars, destined for the fame. In the ring, they'll carve their name. Blood, sweat, tears, the unending game. Joe DeFalco's legacy, they proudly claim. They proudly claim. Body slammers and high flyers, stars on the rise, taking flights off the ropes to the skies. Arm locks, head spin, never compromise. Gold around their waist, the ultimate prize. Hustle hard, dream big, DeFalco's battalion. Ring warriors bred from lion's den, medallion. Every win, every loss, another step uphill. Forge their own path with an iron will. Future stars, destined for the fame. In the ring, they'll carve their name.
Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here on the DeFalco Files with the owner and creator of FSW, the Future Stars Wrestling, here in Las Vegas, Mr. Joe DeFalco. All right, Joe, gearing up for the 25th there, huh?
Yeah, we just were at the HyperX yesterday discussing some things, and you know, everything's pretty much in place. Full card is set. Still haven't gotten the flyer out, but the only match that we hadn't announced, MK Army, Bryce Saturn, and Koa are going to take on Fresco and Watson. So,
oh, nice.
And after everything that's gone on with AJ and Fox, having another match seemed like, you know, between these two former partners. So it looks like they're going to be wrestling in a dog collar match on Saturday. It was either that or the Russian sickle match, but I don't think either one even knows what it is. So,
when's the last time you had a dog collar match? Can you recall?
Not really. I remember the Hefe and Beast had one like in Boulder Highway on like 2010. Jesus. Now, if we had one since then, I think we may have, but I don't really remember. If we have, but I think we did. I just don't recall what it was.
Wow. Just from the perspective of, you know, who you got two young talent, you know, they're seasoned, but they're still young. Who helps them along on something like this? Because that's a complicated type of thing to kind of pattern out and make the story make sense. That's a complex match, even though it looks very simple, you know, tied to a chain, here we go. But there's a lot of things that have to go right or ultimately could go wrong.
Well, yeah, and I'm a big proponent of, if you're in a heated feud, the thing I disliked always about the dog collar match was, or a strap match, is so instead of beating the shit out of somebody, I gotta hit a turnbuckle four times.
Right.
So that's not gonna be the finish in that match. It's basically you have to win the match. So that's why we're still kind of like ironing it out. You know, I was online looking at, you know, the top 85 gimmick matches in wrestling, and you know, they had brought up a dog collar match, and it was like, okay, well, there's the strap match, and you know, there's a couple of different variations. You know, as I joke, you know, I always remember Nikita Koloff and the Russian sickle match, you know,
yeah,
things like that, because you want something that where they're at in the story, you know, these guys, man, it's been very angry between these two, you know what I mean? And it's like, what can we come up with that can make it a little more interesting? So,
and also one of the things I love about the fact is we have two guys who are good looking guys here. So, I mean, you know, there's a chance that, you know, some scarring, some blood, you know, might alter someone's face for the rest of their lives here.
It might, you know what I mean? And it's like, and there's two guys that in that mix of, you know, former tag partners, former tag team champions, they skyrocketed as tag team, you know, got to the championships very quickly, you know, and now all of a sudden, you know, they both kind of got hurt at the same time. They both kind of came back at the same time, and they were really adamant about not working as a tag team coming back, which kind of took me aback at the time. You know what I mean? Right. It was like, you know, it seemed like there was a lot left on the table, and it just seemed like whatever personal issues they had, they were looking forward to go their separate ways. But being two no limits guys, and in that situation, they were kind of in the same mix, whether it was Oasis or whether it was Jayden Cole. So even though they weren't really working each other, they were, because we ended up having a four-way. We had a triple threat match because they were two, you know, highly regarded no limits talent. And it seems like because of each other, you could probably blame each other for them not being no limits champ. So there was animosity to begin with, and now, you know, one standing in the way of maybe the other being a champion. So, you know, it's definitely an interesting feud because, you know, Fox was a guy that, you know, a lot of the fans really liked, and they were big fans of Makeshift Chemistry. And you could just see that there was a difference when he came back from the injury. So here we are, and it's like, you know, we got a bunch of title matches, and here's a match that could easily become, you know, a match of the night.
Yeah. And then, speaking of easily become match of the night, Vandergriff and Jay Vidal, it's a grudge match. So what's, you know, what can we expect from those two who, you know, just so much history there between the two of them. And, you know, I'm assuming there has to be some chair shots from Matt as receipts for Jay taking him out. Come on now.
Well, you know, looking at these two, these are the only guys in our history that had three title changes in three matches that they had with each other. But in between that, they've also became best friends and then enemies. Yeah. So, and then Matt's been out for a long time. He came back. He was out for a long time, came back, and then was out for an even longer time.
Yeah.
So, you know, Matt has rarely been seen in a ring on a show in the last year and a half. Yeah. And, you know, he's also a guy waiting in line to get that title shot. And that's what also happens when Jay Vidal's been with us for so long, and Matt's been with us for so long, and Bodie's been with us for so long, that all these guys are so intertwined that the winner of this match, I can't believe, doesn't become in line for an opportunity for Bodie.
Well, you see that as if Bodie's coming out of this match still champion. I mean, listen, Luke has given Bodie about all he could chew over the last 6 to 8 months,
and Luke has pinned Bodie. So, you know, Luke's win-loss record has been pretty strong, but I believe Luke has been pinned by Bodie, but I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I believe, one of the Hyper X's, and that's when Luke laid him out after the match. So, you know, there's a lot of heat going on in that one. So, you know, that. Believe me, there's more of a waiting line for this than, you know, the popular ride at Disneyland.
Yeah. Seriously. Wait, have you just compared Bodie to Ric Flair? and Space Mountain? Is that is
that, Bodhi... that's Disney World?
Oh,
totally, okay. Totally different.
Ah,
I don't even think it's the same owners.
Bodhi's. What's like the other ride, the log ride? I guess it's now the Prince and the Princess, the Frog and the Princess now.
So. The teacups?
The teacups.
And, you know, and Bodhi has his own list. So Bodhi better win some matches. You know, we're talking to some ID guys and, you know, Marcus Mathers and Cappuccino. And then we got former ID guys like Ice Williams on the back burner. But, you know, Ice is going after the Nevada State Championship, a singles title that he hasn't had.
Yep.
And, you know, Brett the Threat, you know. He's been walking around with the belt, and he's been cutting promos everywhere. He's, you know, a very enthusiastic champion. I'll give him that. And he's like, oh, I want Matt Riddle, and I want this guy, and he wants everybody from Bloodsport. What about Josh Barnett, you know? And one thing about, you know, Bret the Threat, it's like you think you'd scare him and say, hey, you know, I might see about bringing in Matt. Like, he wants to wrestle these guys.
Yep.
You know, there's no fear in Bret the Threat. He, you know, and a lot of times it's been overconfidence, and that's what ended up costing him some matches. But you know what? You know, over the years, he's matured immensely. And, you know, he took advantage of an opportunity. And he ends up being in a match where there's three other guys in it. And, you know, you got Shogun and Hiro, and he finally, you know, vanquished, you know, San Lu. So, and, you know, he's got to watch out also after this match. If he can get through Ice, you got former heavyweight champion Shogun on the horizon. You got a rematch with San Lu. You got a lot of people who are looking for opportunities. So, man, you look around, and there's not a lot of companies you could look around and be like, man, there's seven guys available to wrestle Bodhi that could take the title. Oh, shit, there's nine guys who can go after Bret the Threat that could take the title.
Well, and you know what? Joe, and you know what? It's not even could take the title. What's the most impressive is that it's plug-and-play parts that if you take one out and put one in, you're not losing any of – the skill, the buildup, the story. These guys all understand and are trained in the way in which it makes it different than, hey, you can go down to, you know, Poughkeepsie, New York, and I'm sure the wrestling company is great for the fans in Poughkeepsie, but the same eight guys wrestling each other every, you know, 6 weeks, it gets old, right? You know, this is unbelievable. This is top-notch talent that at any point you get to plug in and play with, which is fucking phenomenal.
Well, yeah, it's funny because you say that. I didn't realize it, but I saw Paulie's post, and it was Kevin's birthday yesterday. And I hadn't talked to Kevin in a month or two. You know, we talked after, you know, Natural Born Killers and everything. But I wished him a happy birthday. And the funny thing is, my buddy from where I come from, Mayapak, Poughkeepsie's kind of an old stomping grounds for us. There was a club called Briars that we used to work on Route 9. And I remember running out of gas because I got called in to go work there. And I remember hitchhiking at like 2 a.m. when the club closed. Thankfully, a guy took me part of the way, but I had to walk back with a gas tank. But it was literally a few minutes from the, it was called the Mid-Hudson Civic Center back in the day. And when I did my college radio, I got to do an interview with Quiet Riot. And they were playing the Mid-Hudson Civic Center with a band called Keel. And Ron Keel became a country singer, but now I see Ron Keel. You want to talk about circles of life and everything. I saw a post on Facebook that the Kiss Cruise that's going to be in Vegas, Keel's playing. So going back to the story, my buddy, the former police chief of Yorktown, New York, my boy Bobby, the one when he comes out, we play golf. So, you know, obviously he knows what I do and everything. And he was a wrestling fan, obviously not like I was, but he sent me the flyer. He's like, oh, your boy Cross is here tomorrow. And so, again, full circle with the details. But looking at that, and I had talked to Kevin, and I mentioned, I'm like, you know, those are super mecha shows. And, you know, that's like WWE coming to town. And it's like, I'd love to do that show, but I couldn't do that every month because the budget is crazy with the amount of money they pay. And we're fortunate that we can draw good crowds with far less of budgets because our fan base digs what we're doing, and we have built up such great talent. But don't forget, when we did the Mecca, those were the biggest numbers we've done at the HyperX because people want to see stars. Yeah. And, you know, good title, awesome championship wrestling. You know, there's names everywhere on that show. And, you know, talking about Kevin and talking about the Hall of Fame, and, you know, he's been really busy and he's been doing some stuff and he's trying to do his acting. So he's taken far less bookings. And funny thing is, literally 2 hours ago, we were having a text back and forth about trying to work in, you know, with the Natural Born Killers, Jeff Cobb lives in town, Lawler's healing. Man, you know, no more blood sport, you know, trying to package some things and trying to do some really, really big things, trying to make some other shows at the HyperX, you know, extremely special, whether it's a day-night doubleheader, like the Mets play, and probably lose both games, you know, doing the day-night doubleheader where we do a Saturday at 2 p.m., and then we do an 8 o'clock show, or we do a 4 o'clock show and a 9 o'clock late night and do two nights because, you know, pricing's the same for the venue. You know what I mean? Right. And maybe we could put some stuff together. But, you know, but as I talk about, you know, we talk about our roster, you know, here we go again where, hey, Shogun's not on the show, and San Lu's not on this show, and G Sharp's not on this show, and Bateman's not on this show, and Remy Marcel's not on the show. And, you know, there's a lot of name guys, and Damian Drake's still not on the show. So it's like, you want to talk about plug and play, man, there's so many opportunities. You know, Dante King, we hadn't seen for a while, then all of a sudden he qualified by concussing Lou Curtis, got into the Cash in the Case ladder match. And now, you know, Jaden Cole made a request. He wants the former champion. So now Dante King and Jaden Cole, we have a No Limits match, you know, for the No Limits championship. So, that, you know, that's an interesting matchup, you know. Sometimes it's called stepping up in class. You know, Jaden Cole, sure, after he beat Oasis, but he was wrestling, you know, Fox and AJ. And they had their own inner turmoil. So not saying it was easy for Jaden Cole, but, you know, when your number one goal isn't in a title match to win the title, it's to beat up the other guy. You know, it's kind of like when there was a guy who came to town who tried to run me out of business, but he wasn't trying to have the best wrestling. He was just trying to put me out of business. Right. And it's like, yeah, you're not going to outwork me, motherfucker. And, you know, went by the wayside. And now Jaden Cole's got a guy who's motivated. Hey, I'm available. And it's like, yeah, sorry, got nothing for you, Dante. You know, we're doing some stuff with the tag teams. Things didn't work out. And again, when there's 34 people and I got 22 spots and, you know, 12 of them, there's no spot for.
Yeah,
and you're talking about my last two FSW heavyweight champions, Bateman and Sharp. You know, and you know, we're working on Survival of the Fittest, and we got big things happening there. And you know, Zoe Stark against Brittany Brooks. You know, signed, sealed, and delivered. That match has been set.
Nice.
So it's like, man, it just keeps going and going and going. There is no take a few days off. It's crazy running two or three shows a month, but it's like, man, I don't know how I would be able to handle it And again, it's a different category, but like when I talk about GCW and they're always on the road, but you know, they're less storyline based. So, you know, when they're doing a show next week, they're probably, there's a good chance they might be doing it in a town they might not have been in 7 months. So they're just going to have cool matches.
Right. And I think that's the key here is, you know, again, my thing, and this goes back to what we saw at UPW, Rick did the same thing. And that is, it's more about developing the talent and then letting that talent show that they're the show, and then building around by bringing in, you know, this former WWE guy, this, you know, this talent, that talent, and bringing in guys. I mean, like, you know, I mean, Limelight, what a great addition he was, you know, you know, and then giving opportunities. Look at a guy like Jordan Cruz now, you know, what he's doing out there. Look at what Evan Daniels is doing out there, you know. So it's, you know, all this other opportunity, but it starts with all the talent that is grown here and these guys who, if you don't step your game up, you don't have a chance of sticking, you know, with being on shows because someone's ready to step up and take your place. And I think that's, I mean, that's one of the most impressive things is that every piece is replaceable because someone else is just as hard.
Yeah. And then you got all these guys and they all want to be back because it's such a strong product that, you know, everybody wants to be a part of it. So, and it's like, you know, there's no longer, hey, we're doing 10 matches and we're doing the 6-man and an 8-man scramble, or, you know, an 8-man tag and a 6-man scramble. And now there's 30, you know, there's only so much the fan base can take. You know, we used to do shows consistently, probably around 3 hours, and it's just, it's too much. You know what I mean? So it's like the saying, making people want more is, you know, eight matches are solid. You know, we might have 2 tag matches. We might have 1 multi-man, whatever. Like right now, you know, I look at the card and we don't have.
You have 1 tag team match.
No, we got 2.
The
Mariachis against the First Responders, and we just added Lights, Camera, Faction. It was the last spot. So it was either going to be a 4 or 5-way scramble, or it was going to be the tag. So which
is crazy to think about. And by the way, the Mariachis, man, you got to give it up. Joey posted on Santino Brothers did a show this past weekend. It was an outdoor show. It had a big crowd. And the photo he used to, you know, say, you know, thank you to the fans and how great the show was a picture of the Mariachis holding up the sombreros on the ring apron for the ring introductions. That's how over these guys are. Is that Santino Brothers is using these guys to represent?
Oh, absolutely. Like they used them when they were doing something at Dodger Stadium. Yeah, so, you know, and their popularity, you know, I shake my head. It's crazy to me. But, you know, you can never understand what makes certain people, you know, get embraced by the fans. There's guys that you swear are going to be the biggest. Oh, they're going to love this guy, and they don't care. You know, you even look at it back in the day where WWE said The Rock's the guy, and everybody hated him, and that's what translated him into it. Same thing with Roman Reigns, and now Roman Reigns is, even as much as people love Punk, Roman Reigns is beloved.
Yeah,
because, you know, he's put in the time and he's put in the work, and people have seen him go from a guy.
Did you hear Rickers on Monday night, his mic work? He called Roman on this shit, on being forced down the throats of people. And the only reason people like you now is because you were forced so much down their throats that they had no choice but to like you. Rigger cut one of the best promos he's had in a long time on Monday Night Man.
Well, you know, I'm interested to see where that thing goes. It's kind of all over the place. So
I know
Ricker, who's beloved, is teaming with Solo Sikoa, who's not loved, and then Royce Keyes, which, you know, that's the perfect picture. You know, not that we used Royce Keyes, Will Rude very often, but he was in a big match of Survival of the Fittest with Chris Masters and Lance Hoyt and Killer Cross. So, and, you know, you got the former Nevada State champion, the former Elite champion, former two-time FSW heavyweight champion. It's like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, and getting back, mariachis, and I mean, the First Responders, man, it's amazing how much these two have clicked. C4 and Dave, I think, C4 is learning so much from Dave. This is one of the best things that could have happened to him. But you talk about two styles that just really, like, you've always been a Heart Foundation guy. It's like looking at Brett and the Anvil, right? You have those two styles in these two, where you have the muscle and you have the tactical. And just a wonderful chance to see these two teams go at each other. That's a great matchup.
Yeah, and you know what? And C4 is a guy who's put in the work from beforehand. You know what I mean? And it was like the idea of the First Responders and the guy from the Air Force guy and the firefighter, you know, kind of, you like to say, it writes itself sometimes. Yeah. But it wouldn't have worked if C4 wasn't a guy who was putting in the work. You know what I mean? It's like, just because he was from the Air Force base, I wouldn't want to hold down a guy like Dave Mazzani, who gives forth as much effort as anybody, sells tickets, so motivated, crowd digs him, you know what I mean? Yep. And it's like, you know, Dave can do fine on his own. But here's a guy with huge, and the posts have just come up from his days as the EWF or EWC. Whatever it was, South Africa, where he was the middleweight champion. I remember watching the fight, and like, he's a legit fighter, as well as a guy kind of like that Tom Lawler, where they were doing both things for a while. You know, EFC. There you go. Instead of Ultimate Fighting, it was something based out of South Africa. Right. But C4, you see him in the ring. He's a big guy, but he's a young guy. So he's going to make those mistakes. And being in there with Dave, they really clicked and they really work well together. And it's funny because once Dave got through the academy and all the other stuff, we hadn't used Dave in a couple of years probably.
Yeah.
And it was like he retired from fighting and he was putting all his energy into becoming a firefighter. And once he got cleared, man, he opened up that schedule. I see him at training. You know, he made sure the rust wasn't going to be getting out just by having a match. It was like putting in the work and rededicating himself. Because now, when the MMA out of the picture, sure, he'll go to the couture and train and everything. But now his focus, it used to be like 30% wrestling, 20% wrestling, and 80% MMA. And now, other than work, it's 100% pro wrestling. And sky's the limit on, you know, the success of Dave Mazzani and the First Responders. You know, this should be an exciting match where it's going to be interesting to see that both teams that are so over with the fans.
Yeah.
Are the fans going to pick a side or just, you know, sit back and enjoy?
Yeah. And that's one of the things that, you know, a couple of these matches, you know, even though storyline dictates, you also go, you know, Jay Vidal, as much as fans hate him, there are still those fans who love the guy.
Oh, yeah. When you've been around forever, you know,
so
it was kind of, you know, and then you got another match where you got somebody who people didn't care for. She was part of the MK Army, Zamaya, the new women's champion. And now she's going up against the OG, you know, one of the most popular women wrestlers we've had in Maserati. So, and she's a former couple, two-time champion.
Yeah. And Zamaya, again, man, you just look at it's amazing what you can accomplish in pro wrestling in a 2 to 3 year time span. And to look where she was 2 to 3 years ago and where she is now, not only here, but in Arizona, starting to get bookings elsewhere. I mean, she is
MLW contract.
Yeah.
and winning matches, not just being brought in as enhancement talent to put over somebody. They had a name wrestler. I don't know. I think it was Priscilla Kelly or somebody. And Zamaya walked out with the W. So, you know, and see, that's the key. It's, you know, people talk about it. I talk about it all the time. You could say blowing smoke, bunch of bullshit, whatever the fuck you want to say. But you put the work in, and you're dealing with guys like Hammerstone and Gallo and Graves and Class and Devin Reno, who they became students of the game, of Devin Reno and Class and all these guys. And when you have people up here that are teaching you, that's great, but are you taking advantage of it?
Right.
You know, we talk about, I'll say something and TJP will be like, oh, I don't know who that is. Or Chris Bay, who's there all the time. Oh, I don't know who that is. He's never here in my class. And it's like, wow. So you paid your dues for the month and you haven't even come to the Chris Bay or TJP class. Like, wow. Like you couldn't switch one day out of your schedule to be in a class taught by someone who's wrestled all over the world. TJP's wrestled for like every major company ever. Yeah. And he's only 35 years old or whatever. Yeah. And Chris Bay was a guy who moved here, said, I want to be a wrestler, wouldn't take no for an answer. And in a third or fourth of the time that it took a Brian Cage or an LA Knight to get signed, Chris was signed.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, he don't even know who you are.
Yeah, and think back, I remember being on that phone call early on AEW with Cody when Cody was doing the media calls, and Cody, right before Chris signed with TNA, and I think it was either right before he did that dark match here for SmackDown, or the I call it a dark match, but it was the 205 live.
Yeah.
But Cody actually called out Chris Bay as being on the radar.
And Solo Sikoa, which was crazy.
Yeah.
But the two guys Cody Rhodes called out were wrestlers trained by FSW.
Yes. It's like, holy shit. You know? And again, it's like, and you've seen too, the other thing too is, I don't understand how you could not, first, Chris's mind, just in general, as a person, is unbelievable. But for wrestling. And then you look at how much respect all these people across the board. We just saw, what, a couple weeks ago, Chris posted the pictures of him and Punk in the gym. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, these guys respect him. Why would you not?
It's like, wow, not even the... Even if you didn't train, just to be there to listen.
Listen.
Yes. Ask a question. You know, there's times Chris will come in and, you know, we're talking about that, you know, where Chris is getting a little bit busy in terms of being where people are utilizing him for different roles and meet and greets and all the other stuff. But Chris has always been a big proponent, which he probably got from Kenny King, that Kenny loved to go over the week's prior show, the future shocks. Yeah. Because, yeah, we can go over a main show, but there's really not a lot of critiques. And not, And believe me, the Jay Vidals and the Matt Vandegrifts and those guys are going to listen to what you have to say.
Right.
But there's far less to tell them than the kid who's working Future Shock. The reason he's working Future Shock in most cases is he hasn't elevated himself to being in the main roster. What are you doing wrong? What do you need to work on? And sometimes it falls by the wayside because there's so many other things going on that you don't have the opportunity to sit and watch. And there's the smart ones, and Chris will be like, oh, like a Jaden Cole might send a match to Chris Bay. Or, hey, can you check this out? Hey, let me know what you think. And you see the ones who are students of the game. And the students of the game, sorry to say, they got a leg up on the majority of the other people because they're trying to figure out every way they can to be better. And then you see a lot of people who, and you, it's everywhere. You know, you hear an AEW about the huge influence a Bryan Danielson or certain people have. And then there's some that talk about how you try to tell people something and they think they know it all. Yeah. Well, if you're an AEW and you think you know it all, that's one thing. You don't, but that's one thing. If you're a young talent and there's a reason why you're only on Ring of Honor and you're not on AEW television.
Right.
But when you're in FSW and you're not even on the main shows and you're only on Future Shock and you're not seeming to be able to break that glass ceiling, that means you probably need some work on some stuff.
Right.
Why wouldn't you want to figure that out? You know, when we bring in a Jake Redondo who a Remy puts over and a Danny Limelight's now putting over huge and we bring him in and here's a guy and, you know, talking to people, you know, I've heard some stories, you know, that he knows he's good. And, you know, his dad wrestled in the scene. We're talking about Alcatraz and, you know, his dad was a SoCal guy who wrestled for years. Yep. And, you know, there's that difference between ego and I'm better than you, or, you know, taking criticism or being humble and things like that. And, you know, sometimes guys are a little too cocky and they got to be brought down to earth. And I see it with our guys where some of them think they're, it's like, dude, you're good for a guy who's been doing it 11 months. If you told me you were doing it for 4 years, you wouldn't be on my shows. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, you're progressing well. But I've seen so many guys get to that point where they get good enough to be on shows and then the improvement never happens.
Right.
And then instead of, hey, I'm not working hard enough. Oh, yeah, Joe don't like me.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, that's it. I don't like you. So I liked you enough to put you on shows and now I don't because I don't like you. It's not because you're not putting in the effort, you're not giving the matches, you're not listening, you know. We have plenty of guys that I use on Future Shock that I think have talent, but they don't, they're their own worst enemy. And it's like, it ain't me, it's the trainers, it's everybody. We can't tell you the same thing a fucking 100 times and you don't learn from your mistakes.
Yeah. Right. Let's be fair too. If this was a football team or a basketball team, you only have a number of spots.
Oh. So
you're not going to make the team. You're not going to be part of that performance because, you know, even think in theater, you know, it's the same thing when you get these people who get these huge egos because they're so good in community theater. And it's like, so you're the star of a show that, you know, 100 people see, you know, for 3 nights. And that makes you as talented as any actor out there. Right? You're satisfying your own ego and you think you're better than what you are. And you are not hungry, you're complacent.
Well, yeah, and it's the talent pool of where you're at. It's no different when you are the star of your high school baseball team.
Yeah.
Our baseball team was one of the best in the county. And we had this kid, Teddy Lawrence, man, he was all world. And he got drafted and never got past single A. And like, holy shit, like that guy was a fucking superstar. But now he's competing against 100 other superstars from all over 1,000 counties. You know, it's funny, as good as our team was, we had one kid, this guy, Dave Fleming. And he ended up being like the MVP for LSU when they won, or Georgia, they won the college baseball championship. And you're like, oh, fucking hey. Got drafted by the Seattle Mariners, and he won 19 games his first year. Blew out his arm and never pitched again. Like, he pitched like, you know, 5 games the second year, and he was done. Yeah. And it's like, when it comes to here, it's like you could be that indie guy, but now you got to take a step up. And now how do you get to that next level? And it's like, you know, Jaden Cole didn't get put in that position because I like him better than somebody else. He got put in that position because he wrestled in front of Gabe Sapolsky and did a really good job. And then we put him in some matches and he did a really good job. And then he wrestled good people. And those people said, wow, he did a really good job. And it was like, that's what you do. It's the same thing when I put a kid in a Future Shock and I would make him wrestle Sharp, or I'd make him wrestle Watson. It'd be like, hey, give him a little, see what he can do. If he does well, give him more. And there have been guys who shit the bed and the match ended quicker than we expected it to. And then there were times, Ice Williams' first match, like, holy shit, this motherfucker's got it. He went out there and killed it, you know? And there's guys who've been out there who've done that, and there are guys who've been out there who haven't done that. But it's like, you have to be somebody who's never content at where you're at. And when you look at FSW, for example, Lacey Ryan, Zoe Serrano was never content, closed down during the pandemic, and she continued and got matches and got better and got him put in spots. And Chris Bay, like, wow, Chris Bay's in TNA. And he trains more than 90% of you motherfuckers who haven't even had matches yet. Like, how do you think you're going to make it when here's a guy who's already made it is still putting in 10 times the amount of work you are? Like, you know, you want to be on a couple of random shows, and you never want to do anything other than maybe get on Future Shock. Sure. There's guys that are good enough, but I also seen guys that could be better,
sure,
but they're content. And and again, Tyshawn Prince, perfect example. Okay, Tyshawn Prince, 6'6", 350, moved around. We always used to say, like, he was a more versatile version of, say, Mark Henry back in the day.
Sure.
You know, and Tyshawn was our heavyweight champion. Tyshawn was fantastic. You know, Tyshawn was kind of looked at, but he didn't want to leave Vegas, had a really good job. He didn't want to go through the grind. And he was a guy who was happy and content. But he's one of the few that were at a level that he could have gone to a next level.
Right. Yeah.
But was happy with his situation. Yeah. Now, if you ask him now, after everything said and done, I'm pretty sure he would have told you, he would have liked to have at least tried that opportunity to see where it could have went, you know, but you know what I mean? Everybody has their own lives to live. And if being the guy who is a champion locally and wrestles once in a while and goes to California, Arizona, and they're happy with that, more power to them. You know, people say weekend warriors, there's nothing wrong with that if that's what you want to do. But it's like the kid who is a referee but wants to wrestle. Well, they don't get everything out of it because that's not what they're looking to do. So if you're not looking to be a WWE wrestler and you're happy where you are showing up 1 or 2 days a week, why are you coming 4 or 5?
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like practice makes perfect, you know? How did Larry Bird become the best 3-point shooter, Steph? Because they shot probably 10,000 times a day. When Steph, great, he didn't say, you know what, yeah, I hit 12 out of my last 20. I'm done for today. I'm going to hang out and we're going to go to the diner or whatever the fuck. No, he probably spent way more time than he needed to. But, you know, now he's made $500 million in his life playing basketball because he chose to continually practice and practice and practice.
Right. There's a nice little picture that was posted by Paulie. Do you remember this? And this was followed up with a fan version back then of that picture.
Yes, I remember it well. Tyshawn had enough of Sally, decided to go his own ways, and, you know, the dynasty. Alcatraz turned his ways and it made the better for him. He ended up winning the championship from Tyshawn.
Yeah.
But I remember later on we had a match where if Tyshawn won, he got 5 minutes with Sally. But I'll be honest, it didn't do it wasn't as exciting as we expected it to be.
You know, speaking of, and you said Kevin Cross's birthday, I like these pictures of Kevin and his father back in the day. That was pretty sweet to see. And then Kevin and his grandfather, just amazing to see these shots posted online. And speaking of, you know, Sally, I mean, yeah. Is there a man who goes through more transitions of looking younger than looking older and then looking older and then looking younger?
No, I'll tell you that, to be honest with you. Yeah, Sally has changed his look many different times. The best thing he ever did was shave his head.
Yes.
He had the 60-year-old twirl that my dad used to, you know, keep. And instead of just getting rid of the hair.
Oh, man. All right. As we get ready to wrap up here, final thoughts going into capital punishment on the 25th.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun show. We, you know, besides it being my birthday, we have we're going to have a birthday party in one of the VIP rooms. 15 kids are coming. They want to celebrate. They were looking for a fun thing to do.
Nice.
Actually, it's Stitch Duran's daughter who has come to a bunch of FSW shows. So nice. We're going to have a fun time, and we got a great show. We've offered discount tickets. You know, I don't want my birthday show to be the least attended. So you know what I mean. So it's like, hey, well, let's get some cheaper tickets out there. So. It's basically like if you went to the FSW arena and now you got food, drink, and air conditioning for the same price. Yeah. So it's a pretty great deal. $30 front row. You know, we probably got about 15 left on there, and we can always add a couple onto the stage because we set that up. So really looking forward to it. You know, we got all the titles on the line. We got a great show in store.
Will there be a pre-show match?
Yes. Don't know what it is yet. We are still trying to figure that out, but I am definitely wanting to maybe get some Future Shock talent or some of the talent that hasn't been on. You know, maybe we do a nice little four-way, you know, free-for-all and do a scramble match as a part of the pre-show festivities. The kickoff match, as we like to call it now.
Joe's birthday scramble ganza.
There you go.
and remember too, you know, if the birthday doesn't draw, then it wasn't the birthday show. It was your last 60th show. So you know you can
You know, it's the Roger Maris birthday bash, 61.
Right. Yeah. You know, and again, looking up and down this card, this is really set to be one heck of a show. Just solid all around. The HyperX, Tom Howard at the last show, he just looked at it and he's, this is incredible. This is incredible.
Yeah, one more match. we can bring in his boy Heidenreich.
Yeah. Hey.
He might be able to get the day off from Trader Joe's or wherever he's working. Target, something like that.
I'll reach out to him.
There you go.
John, you just come out. You'd love that kind of crazy in the locker room. That would be.
I remember that creepy angle with Michael Cole. It was like, I'm one who's all for that type of stuff. It's supposed to be theater. Supposed to be, like a movie, cinema. Why can't we do this storyline? I saw it in a movie.
Yeah.
Something similar. It's okay to, it's offensive. You know how many movies are offensive? Almost every single one.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's always good. That's that's the thing I don't understand too. When you look, just saw someone post regarding the Danhausen match. On Saturday night's main event. And the thing that got me is that the person posted that it wasn't because of the satirical or the silliness of the character, but the satanicness of the character. And it just blew my mind because, most fans will complain, that's not a serious wrestler. That's, that's just entertainment. That's bullshit, blah, blah, blah. But to see someone who I'm assuming watched the WWE when you had The Undertaker and Kane and some of the most satanical undertones of.
You had Viscera when they had the
darkness. Yeah. The Acolytes, it was, everything was a satanic cult. It's funny what people, get offended by when it's just made for everything, Oh, look at this. Beans chiming in with most of the FSW champions are under 30. You got a young career going.
Crazy.
And it's promising, man. It's promising because if you're a young talent under 30, these guys are showing you it can be done. That's a big lesson to learn here too. But you have to put in that work. And that's it.
I don't know why anybody would think differently, or I guess there are some that are so naturally gifted and talented that maybe they don't have to do as much, because I'll be the first to tell you, it kind of came natural to Sepha. He wasn't the guy who was there 5-6 days a week, but he had been around the business his whole life, and it is very rare that you saw a guy like him and it was just like, picked it up. And there's guys who haven't been around the business who pick it up and pick it up and understand. Like, there's so many aspects of the business where a guy like Cross, who was a jiu-jitsu guy, earn money having probably fights, like blood sport back in the day, know what I mean? But persona and personality and charisma and there's all the, and mic work and there's so many different things to do. And it's like, it's great that you could be the fucking worst on a microphone, but still be a great fucking wrestler. Right. Or you could be really good at four things, but your character's amazing and you're a champion.
Yeah.
but you can't be mediocre at everything.
Right.
And think, wow, why am I not the champion?
Right.
You know, that's why it was crazy, like, to see a guy like Tom Brady, okay, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. He couldn't even get off the fucking bench at Michigan.
Michigan.
A top-notch school. He was the backup quarterback who never saw any time. Like, who in their right mind would think that Drew Bledsoe would get hurt, he'd step in, and they'd win a Super Bowl?
Yeah.
But somebody, Bill Belichick, saw something in this kid, because there's guys like Aaron Rodgers sat for years, you know? Yeah. There's guys who sat, and Kurt Warner was bagging groceries. He was playing indoor football.
Yeah.
Did he just magically become fucking great? Or was he like, man, I can't even make it in the NFL as a third string quarterback? And then somehow became an MVP and later became a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Because as good as he was in high school and as good as he was in college, wasn't good enough. Now he had to adjust. He had to do different things. Yeah. You know, it's the same thing in wrestling. You see people and it was like they reinvent themselves.
Leo Rush. Leo Rush is a great example right now.
Leo Rush, his wrestling, as good as he was, it didn't get him past the point.
Yep.
But that personality and character, man, nobody does it better than him. It's like, wow, this guy's fucking great. Yep. Like, I never said, well, I love Leo Rush. Now it's like, holy shit, I love Leo Rush.
Right. 100%. I think, and you're seeing it again, you're seeing it in a guy like Danhausen. Danhausen knew what his niche was.
I'll tell you what, and people didn't want to like him after he was the surprise. Like, who the fuck is this motherfucker?
Right.
And gobbly gooker too.
Right. And now it's printing money for the guy.
They gave him this opportunity. No different than when LA Knight was stuck as, you know, Max Dupree.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for whatever reason, maybe Vince thought he was too old, whatever it was. Hopefully Triple H liked him, whatever. They're going to repackage him because, again, being a manager of a team that never wins, I mean, those guys will be out of a job, but maybe you'll be out of it sooner than them. Because if you're a manager who doesn't win, what use are you? You know, and needless to say, they gave him an opportunity and the Bray Wyatt thing. All he was fodder for Bray Wyatt was coming back and he's going to smash this motherfucker at WrestleMania. And he did smash the motherfucker at WrestleMania, but they gave him the microphone. Yep. And for anybody who ever came to the FSW Arena on Boulder Highway in 2009, 10 and 11 and heard this motherfucker talk, we all knew. And then when he went to TNA and became world champion as Eli Drake, we knew if you give this motherfucker a microphone, people are going to be engaged.
Yeah.
And then they saw they had something and they couldn't stop the momentum. And again, it's kind of like with Cross, the TikTok. When I talk about Cross and he started and he already had Pay the Toll and TikTok and all this stuff when he never even had a match. Well, go back to our YouTube page and go look at the Sean Rickerisms because I was so enthralled and enjoyed the Rickerisms. I'm like, hey, come up with some stuff, little one-liners, little 30-second things. And it was always with the let me talk to you. And it was the same verbiage.
Yeah.
He knew how to entertain. Yep. And this was before he did that show with The Rock on TBS. And it was like, oh, he's just ripping off The Rock. And it's like, no, he has his own style. And yeah, you know, just because a guy talks that way, everything is ripping everybody's ripping somebody off. But then you hear and think, oh, this guy stole my move. You mean the move you stole from somebody who stole the move? Who the move has been stolen 600 fucking times? Like who? My finisher?
Yeah.
You know, I heard some girl, she was like in NXT or AEW or whatever. Oh, didn't even ask my permission. What? What are you talking about? How many people are asking fucking Jake the Snake fucking permission to use the DDT? I'm pretty sure Raven did because he was like his mentor. You know what I mean? And it was like,
you know, yeah, I'll tell you. When UPW was associated with the WWE, the one thing that they told all the trainers, you can't teach them how to do a stunner, a rock bottom, anything that was associated with the top guys.
Right, right.
And that came from the company, so everyone respected that. But like you said, you know, you look at it and you go, okay, so Austin's doing a stunner, and over on WCW, DDP is doing a diamond cutter. It's the same fucking move.
No, it's a diamond cutter, and that's a stunner. What are you talking about? Totally different. And then there's the RKO. To see me, the RKO is a little is closer to the cutter,
right? Yeah.
Than the stunner. You know, it's a little variation of the difference.
And here,
you
know, we it's are.
Like the art of finesse, and it's like how many people right. are using, and it's like, hey, did Chris say it was okay? You know what I mean? But it's like, you know what? Every move. So does everybody send a check to Petey Williams because of the Canadian Destroyer?
Right.
Oh, wait, that's not a Canadian Destroyer. That is the other one that Amazing Red does.
Yes.
You know, that's the Puerto Rican Destroyer. Totally different.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hysterical. It's, I mean, oh, man, some of this stuff is just, it's just fun. It's too, that's the other thing. When it comes down to it, I mean, you know.
The thing is, the key is, if you're going to do a pedigree, call it a different thing.
Yeah.
If you call it a different name, well, now it's not the pedigree. Well, you're stealing from Triple H. It's a pedigree. Right. Well, we know it's a pedigree. The DDT is weird because it's still called the DDT, but now it's not even a trans. It's not even a one count. It's just a transition move into something, which is crazy. Because whenever I saw Raven do it, because Raven was the best after Jake, but.
And he called it the even flow.
Yes, the even flow. I know. Raven was one of my favorites of all time. So, you know, but his was a variation. It was different than the way Jake did. Jake tucked the head, boom, implant, you were done. I remember my buddy Sal in Connecticut, who I watched the Hogan Ultimate Warrior match at his house. And we used to play pool after work at D. Witten's and Sensations, where I used to do this motherfucker trying to get me a DDT. I'm like, this motherfucker's going to break my neck. You don't know what the fuck he's doing. But, you know, that was a move that was lights out. You know, you were done. And now it's just like, oh, that's the transition into some flippity-flop move.
Even something as simple as, you know, Bulldog always used the power slam. And now a power slam, it's like every other match.
It's just a move. Yeah, it's just a move that's leading into me picking you up to do something else.
So. Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, but wrestling's different these days. But I'm always one that feels that finishes should be protected and set up. And, you know, and that's why I like those scrambles and multi-mans. Because I don't want people kicking out of all these big moves. I want people to break it up because, oh, the match would have been over.
Yeah.
You know, give value. You know, if there's 9 million moves and 9 million moves don't have value, it's hard to be like, and then you watch a match over there and it's like I watch John Cena's finish and I'm like, wow, that's the fucking shits. Like, that doesn't look like it does anything. Like, that just pins somebody. And then I just watch somebody kill a motherfucker and they get a one count.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But, you know, and again, I am now almost 61 and they are not geared toward me. And, you know, even though I book shows and I put things together, I try to get input from the younger guys these days. And, you know, you get the Chris's and Ices who have come along the way, you know, that I used to have a couple of confidants and now I got a few more because we're trying to do, you know, the best thing, you know, we have options. Like back in the day, we didn't have at Future Stars of Wrestling guys that had made it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So who am I going to, you know, back in the day, maybe Modest, you know what I mean? Yeah. But most of those other guys, we didn't have a crew of people that have done so much in the business. But then as time progressed, now all of a sudden they're in your locker room. and you're having these conversations with people. And as their careers escalate to where they're winding down, they enjoy being a part of it. And yeah. and that's where the camaraderie comes in of guys that, like a Sugar Brown, he may leave for a while, but now he's dedicated to being around and working yeah. with the younger kids and trying to pass whatever knowledge he feels he might be able to entail to them.
Yeah.
You know, and Chris Bay, you know, a guy who had a horrific injury and we thought he may never walk again. You know, now he's there every single week working with people and agenting shows. And as I say, more power to him. Like, I don't know if something like that happened to me, I'd even want to be around it. This guy loves it, you know.
And you know, he just posted that video. Was he, I think it was 100 pounds he was rowing. And it was just like, holy motherfucking of God. For any of these kids who don't want to go to the gym and work out, watch what Chris does. And then tell me, I don't have time to work out. You know?
It's well, like, yeah. You know, you look at him now, and it was like when he came back from the you know, from the accident, and he was like walking like me, like a little old man. You know what I mean? When he was able to finally start walking, and his arms were so thin, it's like, holy shit, his fucking arms, he's fucking jacked now. Yeah. That thing with Shogun, like Shogun's bigger than he's ever been.
Jesus Christ, man,
he is a monster. Yes. And it's like, you know, that's working hard, man. These guys were written off in many cases. Doctors yeah. like, bro, you got like a 10% chance. And like 2 months later, the motherfucker is walking. Now, yeah. can he get to that ultimate goal? And to the, you know what? I think his ultimate goal is living a full life. And, yeah. and at this point, looking at the wrestling, like, man, if I ever do this again, this would be a beautiful ending. Like, I haven't talked to him in a couple of weeks, but I see that post is like, did Netflix pick up the documentary? That's or is he saying. Just talking about it?
That's
I haven't like. Talked to him. I'm like, interested.
Yeah.
You know, not that I'm worried about money or nothing, but you know, wouldn't you want some FSW footage?
Yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah. You know, I'm working on my money thing with Stu Stone on the Crazy Horse 2 story. You know what I'm saying? It's like, but we have a lot of valuable Chris Bay stuff.
Yeah. Well, hey, you gotta get with Stu. Maybe get a Dark Side of the Ring on FSW. Maybe do even a like a Buffalo Bill Dark Side of the Ring.
Buffalo Jim.
Buffalo Jim. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, I would debunk the. Guy at the Crazy Horse killed him that they're trying to pass off, and he was like this really clean, wonderful person that never did any illicit drugs or anything like that. So, you know, whatever. But yeah, so you know, if that Murdoch guy in South Carolina could get like 8 fucking documentaries and shows and the Gacy guy and the Pogo the Clown or whatever the fuck. Man, let me make some cash. There was a lot of good Crazy Horse 2 stories.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, that'll do it for this week. Again, it is Saturday, the 25th of July at the Luxor HyperX Arena.
It's the true Saturday night main event, baby.
That's right. And, you know, again, 7 p.m. is the start of the show, but course, doors are open at.
They're open at 6. There was an initial post 6:30. It's like that's not a school show. 6 o'clock at the casino. We want to get some people in there to buy some food and buy some drink and everything.
Yeah.
So you know we're looking to do some things in the production. So hopefully we can get it done. You know we've never been in a situation. We got the main wall. We always got the main wall. Great, everything. But the side walls, instead of just having the FSW banner, we're looking at doing some motion stuff and maybe, you know, the match card with the guy, whoever's fighting each other, they're going to have a screen on the side. You know, if you have access to the multi-million dollar screens, You know, let's make our stuff. Let somebody turn on the stuff. Because if we also had issues where it was like, hey, it didn't seem bright enough. You know, Bodie wins the belt. He's in the corner. It's a little dark. You know, let's get this. Let's get it looking to where people are like, oh, shit, this is this production that cost one millionth less than AEW looks almost as good as AEW or WWE or all the stuff. Like,
you know,
let's up it. You know what I mean? We want to be the point to where, hey, everybody wants to come to the HyperX to run shows, which builds our brand. You know, call Joe DeFalco, maybe we get you in. And what we did for Sam's Town. And, you know, maybe these guys will treat us a lot better than the fact that we made Sam's Town basically the place for wrestling and I couldn't even get a free fucking buffet.
Right.
I keep getting my price raised because everybody else that I helped bring in was paying more money than the local company who brought everybody in. Like I said, you know, if it was back in the old day, you know, Bugsy Siegel would have given me free food at the steakhouse every day for bringing business back in old Vegas. Would have been like, thank you, Joe. We appreciate what you're doing for us. Instead, well, you know, the higher ups are like, well, you only pay this and these, and Ring of Honor pays this. And it's like, yeah, but I'm the one who got you Ring of Honor in the motherfucker.
Right. And by the way, it's Ring of Honor. It's a national company.
Yeah. Come and it was on. TNA and got them in there. And I was part of the first negotiations of the deal. They went through me with the contract and everything. And you know, where's the thanks? Like, I didn't care about the thank you. I cared about, hey, let's give you the room for free.
Well, we'll give you a big thank you and a big happy birthday.
Thank you.
This is the birthday weekend, man. 61. Finally broke the record. Even though it wasn't in as many games, you got them.
Yes, I got it.
All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, happy wrestling, everybody.